Alrighty, and welcome here. We got Kevin Reitzel. Welcome.
Thank you. We appreciate it, Cam. Thank you for having us here talking some Highlander.
Anytime. Bigley Fillingsen. And did I pronounce that right?
Not even close. Fillingsen, no. But nobody gets it right. Half the time I get it wrong.
Bigley Fillingsen.
Close enough.
Fillingsness. Yeah, it took me a while. Fillingsness.
I am the worst for surnames.
I just call him Bigley.
I'm your host, Cam, and here we are. We're revisiting again the one, the only fantasy saga that is Highlander, but we've reviewed all the movies, and so has Kevin and company. So if we're going to revisit this, you know, they kind of started it off. The best foes on Blood of the Kings. And I said, hey, you know, we're already re-examining these franchises. We got to talk about the big antagonists that were so sharply written, no pun, and very
see what you intriguing. Did there.
Yep, I couldn't help it. Just the ones that re-illustrated why these showrunners actually fell in love with their fictional world and made one hell of a epic. So before we begin, you know, you guys are already just big movie buffs, love the art of everything, just from production design to fight choreography to subtext and acting. What do you mainly look for in a good antagonist besides just, you know, them having a, you know, tragic backstory that leads to vengeance and inevitably they end up on the wrong side that they think is the right side. But what overall just really gets you, that just makes you go, man, that's just a kick-ass just plot twist. These guys actually tried instead of just having a fancy actor play to the camera, you know?
That's a good point. I'll let Lee touch on the fighting side of it, because we've had a lot of good villains that are good with that. And in Highlander specifically, it's someone who, for me personally, when it comes to a villain, someone that you sympathize with, not just, you know, twirling mustache style, but someone that actually makes sense, someone that can, you know, say, that's why a lot of people were like, maybe Thanos was right. That type of thing. You know,
right. Maybe Darth Vader's not too bad.
And even if they are a little crazy and unhinged, and maybe if you don't agree with them, something that makes them charming and kind of draws you in a little bit. And I got to start with the Kurgan first and foremost, because my now wife, right before I met her, she got to meet Clancy Brown at the Highlander 4K 30th anniversary in Edinburgh, Scotland. And she has a big sleeve tattoo of the Kurgan, you know, and I've heard this from other ladies that there's something about the Kurgan that's hot, you know, so there's that. But when you can come in and just really nail it, not just by looks, but by charisma and really kind of stand out, I think that's a really, really important villain aspect. What about you, Lee?
Definitely. It's always good to have the charisma. It's always good to have style. I really do like a villain that is an actual threat to the main character. Those of you just tuning in, I actually am an actor. I play almost all villains because I am a 6'7", 280-pound monstrosity with more black belts than the JCPenney men's department. So I get to play a lot of these villainous characters. And
it's fun.
Yeah, well, it's fun if you get to fight. If you get to like actually kind of have some fun instead of kind of get kicked around by the bad guy, you know, because the good guy is supposed to win. I really do like it when the bad guy is a threat to the good guy. And I prefer a bad guy who has the lack of a better term, the strength of his convictions. I don't like a bad guy that is the victim of circumstance. I don't like a bad guy that is misunderstood or that has a redemption arc. I think that occasionally that can be very useful, but it's boring now.
It's overused. Yeah.
Especially when that bad guy becomes the good guy. Looking at Marvel.
I was just going to say Marvel. Hello.
Yeah. Like, well, hey, no, Winter Soldier.
It's kind of like how they oversaturate music, or even nowadays with revenge movies, like how longer can we tolerate even, you know, the John Wick Taken formula, you know, before it gets old. So it's a good point, you know, is like, there's so many movies that are popular, but you take one detail away and you lose the suspense, or you don't really feel like the near unstoppable hero, you know, has much opposition, you know, and yeah. You know, everything's fallen victim to it. There's been some Arnold, Dolph, or Keanu movies where we've seen and we've been like, yeah, but they didn't have a good hero to play, or again, you know, I other than the action, there wasn't anything to make me say, hey, you know, they had a very unstoppable force to go against. And you know, sometimes you get that with even other franchises. There's going to be some DC, Marvel, or even a Star Trek where you're just like, yeah, what were they thinking? That villain was kind of lame, man. So,
well, with Marvel especially, you know, not to get too far off track, but all of the good fights, every great fight in Marvel is between good guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really the only standout from that where the character stays a bad guy through his entire arc is the final fight against Thanos. And it's the only truly memorable fight against Thanos, because you have, you know, kind of the Hulk getting smacked around like a rag doll. And then you have whatever happened in Wakanda, which was boring, to be honest. And then you have that epic smackdown where he's got the helicopter blade and he's just fighting against Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man. That was a good fight. That's the only good bad guy fight that Marvel ever did. The rest of the time, you know, as great as Loki was, every fight he had was, it looked like, you know, my nephews trying to look cool, which my nephews are cool, but not that cool.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Like, I like the Doctor Strange movies, but the opening fight where he's practicing, just total botched shaky cam. And I'm just like, well, that clearly was not shot by the same unit. You're just like, so it's very frustrating when, like you say, it just feels like it was a last minute thought.
You know, to bring it back to the Highlander TV series, what Lee and I have discussed plenty of times is how creative they did get with the villains, what their purpose was. You know, some of them were, you know, more interesting than others. We had some really good fight scenes in some of them not so much. some of them had to be creative because maybe they weren't big enough or tall enough or strong enough. You know, Kenny, for example, you know, 800-year-old kid. You know, and when we did a podcast on Blood of Kings for Duncan's Deadliest Immortal Opponents, you know, we also talked about the movies as well. It brought those in there. But it was interesting to see a lot of the Blood of Kings fans give their take on that, and very descriptive on why, you know, people felt strongly about certain characters, and it wasn't always the strongest or, you know, the meanest or whatever, but it was interesting to see the dichotomy between the villains. I mean, Lee, you yourself, you remember that episode and how you had some interesting takes on why you liked certain ones and why you didn't like certain ones.
Yeah, we did have, you know, there are kind of the classic ones. I mean, we had a couple like just walk in like, okay, yeah, these guys are obviously the winners. But it was,
by the way, can I mention the winners? I have that list right here.
Sure.
The four Hall of Fame walk-in villains were Grayson, Consone, Kalis, and Xavier St. Cloud.
Kalis is Star Trek, Kevin.
Kalis. Damn it. Yeah. Damn it. You caught me on that one. It's Kalis.
Your ancestors are ashamed.
Anyway. Yeah, he's freaky.
Yeah, and they were just, you know, the ones like, okay, there's no question that these are great bad guys. And, you know, it was a combination of the swordsmanship. It was a combination, you know, in all of their cases, you know, they kind of met my standard because they weren't trying to be good guys. They didn't need any redemption. They didn't feel bad about what they did. They were bad guys. They were, you know, a couple of them, you know, maybe a step or two away from twirling the mustache. But really, it was just good storytelling and great fights. That's what I really loved about him.
Oh, totally. And to see him, you know, kill Fitz, see Rupert's come up and then, you know, Amanda, you know, has to fight him. It's just all kinds of just, it's just a fun serialized, you know, two-part thing. And you just feel him looming over everybody, even, you know, when they finally take his head, you know.
Lee, do you remember what your number one pick was?
Oh yeah, it was I always forget his name, the weird looking redheaded dude.
Stephen King.
Stephen King, yes.
Yeah.
Because again, not only did he believe that he was right, the audience kind of believed he was too.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things that kind of flipped the script on, you know, all the ways that we kind of justify Duncan getting revenge throughout the show. Like, this is a guy that deserves the kind of revenge Duncan went for. And him not getting it was an interesting moral choice. And I thought that was really cool. Some great fights. Really getting back to kind of the Bob Anderson style from season one, which I am, Kevin's probably tired of me saying it, but I am probably season one is my favorite. Even though like everything kind of gets better, they were swinging so hard in season one that it's hard not to love it.
I have to give you props though, Lee and Cam. He made a good point. It has a season one had a different visual aspect to it. Too,
Thomas J. Wright of Future Millennium and Criminal Minds fame directed a good chunk of this.
Yeah, yeah. My number one, by the way, was James Horton, and he's not in Immortal, but boy, was he bad for Immortals, especially Duncan.
So, he feels bigger than life with all the various psychological, you know, torment.
Yeah.
And hallucinations, and just the other people he has is just almost kind of. Imagine how he'd be in today's world now. He's like,
oh my God.
He'd probably be wrecking havoc at every protest. It's like he's that kind of diabolical guy, you know.
Just, he would be the total cyber criminal too. He would be on top of all
cyber criminal, the typical terrorist who has no double standard.
He would be the first one on TikTok, just bringing down any Immortal or Duncans he could through TikTok.
He would decimate Twitter from Elon Musk and then not even know what to do with it. He'd be just laying destruction. That's what you got to like about Horton. There you go. He's Dr. Strangelove in a way. Yeah. He's with the Hunters, it's just so cool how, you know, they have, you know, just everything that the Watchers don't have. And then they just keep going. That to them, they want to hunt just for the hell of hunting, and they just consider everyone just lesser than them. It's just all just intriguing.
Yeah.
And just hiring just all these other people to impersonate their fallen comrades. It's like, man, how sick do you got to be?
Yeah. Well, and bringing Alexander Vandernew back from a fan's point, that was a really cool thing. But like, that was dark. And like the amount of psychological trauma that has to bring is just crazy.
Oh, totally. I can't imagine. I'd be like, oh, you did not go there. kudos to Andrew DeVoe for playing two diabolical villains on here. Not just one, two.
Yeah.
I had the fortune of talking to him a year ago. He's been very supportive of his fan base because, you know, he's been in everything. Air Force One, the Wishmaster horror comedies, and plenty of other action.
Toy Soldiers. He was a lead terrorist.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's so funny. I think you guys mentioned it, is that when he's playing the guy who takes over a courtroom, it's pretty much still in Toy Soldiers mode. But then when he gets to the.
Yeah, it was like probably, I think it was like around the same year he played those roles.
It was like the first time they did the Dog Day Afternoon Die Hard formula on that show. Yeah. And but it is fun how, you know, when he returned to the show, he probably did his best part, and you know, it made that.
Oh, sinless. Andrew Lorca was even scarier, if you ask me, especially when you have that cult mentality leader. Oh, yeah.
I always tell people I'm not wrong
and I can do whatever you want. And if you go against me, then you know, I'm damning you while you kill me. It's just like, it's just amazing how you can use religion, just brainwash people, and then go even further. Just like, you are worthless. If you do anything, you get nothing, but you know, I'm not wrong. I apologize for nothing.
Lee, what did you call him?
My nickname for Andrew DeVoe is not Robert Davi. Because he looks enough like Robert Davi that you have to be like, okay, really? Is that him or not?
I never got that. That's wild.
Yeah, if you look at, during those younger years.
Special Agent Johnson is too busy blowing up a building before. Oh, man. who would you say has probably a cool like fight with the rest of them?
I mean, the top fight really has obviously to go to Duende.
Oh, Duende.
Yeah. One of the more intricate, one of the, at the time, very unique. Nobody had put that to screen yet. And it was really a culmination of a lot of stuff that Adrian had been doing on the side, of stuff that Anthony had been studying on the side. They actually put out a kind of a VHS tape series on how to do a Mysterious Circle in concert with kind of the still ranking master, a guy named Ramon Martinez, in teaching the Destreza and the Mysterious Circle, which I still have on VHS. And I kind of bragged to Anthony, like, this is how long I've been a fan of yours. But it's that one just kind of stands out as one of the better fights. Any of the fights really with Dustin Nguyen were really good. We actually did a tribute episode to him. He was yet another guy that played two characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, 21 yeah. Jump Street. Yep.
Yep. And currently on Warrior, which is also a fantastic show.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm glad to see he's finally getting recognized and doing a little bit more. He hasn't had that kind of steady work in kind of the American market for a while. But, you know, I think those were really good. But you just see a lot of the more Adrian learned, the better the rest of the villains had to be kind of a challenge for him. So they'd start bringing in the Anthony DeLongis's instead of, you know, some guy. And it started to level up, you know, once they go over to Europe. Acting training in the States, it's changing a little bit now, but doesn't involve a lot of fighting. You might do a semester of stage combat, which is really so that you have it in your tool belt. You don't really study it. Most we're called actor combatants. Most of those guys go to just be the combatants and then eventually choreographers. Whereas in Europe, if you train, you learn how to do all this stage stuff. You learn because you're doing Shakespeare. You're not doing Tennessee Williams. So right. You'll have like all this sword training.
The difference. Yeah. We're not here for tea and talking about abuse. We're here to talk about royal deceit.
Yeah. Whatever is rotten in the state of Denmark at the moment.
Right. This kingdom shall be mine at dusk.
Yes.
I had some, I'm not a fight expert like Lee is, but there was three villains in the TV series that I liked, and that was the Anthony Galen fight with Rowdy Piper at the yes. amusement park. I liked the Michael Kent one, especially with the catching the sword and the cool decapitation there. And I liked the Harris Clay one, too, because Duncan had a special emotional stakes to that one because he was shamed by him while he killed his mentor in front of him. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was a good one for the TV series. I always enjoyed the opening fight scene of the original Highlander too. I always thought that was kind of cool.
You're like, just, who is this guy in the parking lot stalking our hero?
Yeah.
And vanished.
The fans always said the backflips by Iman Fazil never made sense. It looks cool though, but you know, I just thought it was Peter Diamond was the villain playing him.
And good old Star Wars, a lot of Star Wars and James Bond stuntman.
Yeah. But for me, that's just it's just one of the more iconic fight scenes for me personally.
Well, I think that. Probably the best fight scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Although I do have a soft spot for when he takes down that one Nazi guy and the Nazi has like the total like holy shit moment. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
The Indiana Jones moment where he's like, oh boy, let's get
it.
But whatever you say, Jack, you're the master race.
It's a kind of magic moment.
Yeah. It's a kind of magic. To build on the parking lot, that's what I like even more. I think it's season 2 or 3. We get to Peter Outerbridge, who's been in numerous things, Designated Survivor, Nikita, The Expanse. And I love how he played a similar character who kind of stalks Duncan in the parking lot. And to him, he just can't let go of the game. He's getting
what character was that?
It's the character. I don't remember everybody's name. But Peter Outerbridge played one Highlander character, and he's another one. He's been at this misbehaving. Paul Kinman.
Oh, Paul Kinman. Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. Season 4. My bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's right. Being this assassin, he came back to life, and now he just wants to kill for the hell of it.
Reluctant Heroes, I think, was the episode. Yeah.
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 And I mean, he and even the other guy who's going around making his murders look like a vampire, and some of the other guys who just had unusual quirks to them, I really dug, because it kept it fresh and new, kind of like a good on any of the other shows we mentioned, where we're actually trying to see if they, you know, like how they got here, if they can handle it. And even the Richard Lynch character, who's playing like a former warlord who's like wronged Duncan multiple times, and then finally Duncan's kind of like with even the white supremacists, when they're at the alternate timeline of guys who you know, escaped the Hitler assassination. It's just always intriguing how all these guys ultimately test Duncan and everybody, and like, if we kill them, unfortunately we end up being just as bad as them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's, you such know, a painstaking mission, because there's no positive outcome.
I did find probably I didn't put it up there on my best villains, because the episode wasn't executed as well, but Lord Byron, what a fascinating idea it was to bring Byron and Shelley into that conversation. Episode, or season five, somewhere around episode 17 or 18, I think.
The rock star.
Yeah. And you know, the poet, you know, you know, she walks in beauty like the night of starry climes and highest heights, and all this best of dark and light is in her aspect in her eyes. Like, it, you know, he's that poem that you quote to girls when you're trying to get laid in college, you know, but like, also, you know, you go to, you know, Byron's grave, and it's, you know, people are still leaving stuff at it. And you know, the connection to Frankenstein and to, you know, the origin of literally of science fiction. And you just have this, you know, kind of amazing character. And like, he's truly dead inside, you know, and he's trying to remember life, and he's like trying to see it. And it was just a fascinating way to do it. But, you know, again, like these crazy inspirations. And again, they had to bring in a really good swordsman for that episode. They had F. Braun McAsh playing, you know, the other bad guy that Byron fights at the in the flashback.
Nice.
You know, when we were talking about the villains in the movie, so one of my biggest pet peeves was, now, I'm one of the people that actually enjoy Highlander 2. I have, there's
right,
many reasons.
And you guys did a good job just finding just some better, you know, I mean, you've talked about the, how some people are even trying to combine all three cuts, but it is.
Yeah, really, yeah. No, I like the special edition with the additional scenes and the removal of Zeiss, but Michael Ironside, who I love,
he's Katana, baby.
Yeah, but my problem with Katana is he never killed an immortal. He only killed mortals, and he was great as a villain, acting villain, but to me it was too much of kind of a Kurgan wannabe. And you know, there's you know, he's admitted to just, you know, he didn't really care, he just did it for the paycheck, and he's just went overboard with
it's such a shame, because you know, you would like to think that movies and shows can get to where, you know, they don't have to have the allow these investment companies to cut all the good scenes out, you know.
And
it's just even more mind-numbing how you would think, you know, why not have exposition at the beginning, you know, with all the different, you know, re-edits. You would think it would be a wonderful idea to just do just that. Just, have some exposition at the beginning saying, hey, here's the game, it's changing, yada, yada. And by the way, you know, they're brothers. This is really why he wants to kill everybody. And that's how I was with Mario Van Peebles, because again, another beyond talented actor. He's really good in Gunman with Chris Lambert, but it's another.
That's a fun movie. Gunman. Love Gunman.
That's why I like how you guys too have also done all these different movies. You're like, this could have been a Highlander sequel.
Oh, The Hunted. Yeah, we did The Hunted movie.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Lambert. That could have been a Highlander movie right there.
Samurai, Yakuza, come on.
Yeah. That would have been
a better Highlander 3 than Highlander 3 was. That's for sure.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I refuse to rewatch Highlander 3. I'm with you guys. There's just something just very annoying about it. And it is one of those where you're just like, still, you know, like, this villain was there and the actor was giving his all, but they really screwed him over by keeping it ambiguous. It's just like Katana kind of gets away with being over the top, but unfortunately, ultimately, not a good story. With him, though, is like there was no reason to be that silly. It's just like that he's a wizard. There's some magic to explore here.
Yeah.
And all that you do is just have him go around picking on homeless people. And it's like, well, that doesn't do anything. But yeah, we got to talk about Katana and obviously, you know, the Kurganones, because, you know, when they're killed on the same battlefield, he just keeps wanting to continue the fight. It's never over. They do a good job of showing the battle lust. And I feel like they did something similar with Kel. I know everyone's got issues with in-game, but I mean, I still got to applaud them for just casting, you know, 90s favorite Bruce Payne.
Well, I like Bruce. Bruce has always been cool. And, you know, it's interesting how they dove into like the kill count type of thing with that and yes. how that made a difference. And I didn't have a problem with that. It was interesting. And that, you know, it really kind of lets you know that the more you kill, the more powerful that you get. We just kind of wanted a little more out of his cronies, you know, especially, you know, Jin K. You know,
who should have been the main bad guy? That would have been the better final fight, by far.
Oh, wait, Donnie one? Yen, man, come on, you get Donnie Yen.
Yeah. I mean, you know. I do like him in that. I'm just glad they got to be part in one of those movies, just because, you know, just it's already a complex franchise as it is. It could have gone so many different ways, but.
Yeah, I really did enjoy 3 and 4 were the only ones I ever got to see in the theater. So the others were out long before, but like I drove 4 hours to see number 4 in the theaters with all my buddies from high school. And we kind of walked out and we were like, yeah, that was awesome. There's a lot of sword fights and nudity. Yay. But because, you know, this was 20 plus years ago. I'm definitely not that. I am. but it was. Just seeing the everybody kind of back there was a lot of fun, but the kill count thing, you know, we kind of talked about it when we did our review of it a few years ago. It's like, okay, Duncan killed two of the oldest immortals, or multiple of the oldest immortals that ever lived, you know, has survived these prophecies, has done all these crazy things. Like, there's not, you know, this guy having killed like a few others, it's sort of like, you know, those guys that, you know, play MMORPGs and just like build up points by like mining turnips in the forest. It's like, oh yeah, you didn't actually do anything, but you got all these HP or whatever. And now you got big, you didn't actually learn how to do the fight. Exactly. You know, Duncan was there in the fight doing the crazy stuff. And, you know, there was never a setup where Kel was good enough to win. Jin K, definitely.
Yeah. Jin K had honor too, you know.
Felt that. Yeah. That's just it. They were just trying to show, you know, they could have done it better, but I get it. They were just trying to show one of them's dishonorable and the others.
Oh, yeah. And a shout out to my buddy Ian, who played Cracker Bob. Man, he should have had a sword. A bat with spikes. Come on, man.
It's a club sandwich.
Love my brother.
I guess we got to talk about one of the other main ones. How about the millionaires who were doing their own like kidnapping people and hunting them for sport in like one of the later seasons?
Oh, in Dark Tower.
Oh, that God, might be right. It. One of the liked or hated episodes. I just thought the premise was cool.
Oh yeah, and you know, I mean, you kind of get into old literature there again with the Dangerous Game, all that kind of stuff. A little bit of a prequel, kind of to Cube and to later Resident Evil.
You kind of that was have, Devin Merrick. Is that who that was?
Sounds right.
Yeah,
I believe so. I don't know.
Yeah,
most of season 6 is so forgettable to me.
Yeah. Yeah, there was Devin Merrick in Black Tower. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the thief who was kidnapping on the Raven, played by Carlo Rota?
Oh, God, I forget that guy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, hold that. Which one? Mario Cardoso, the Full Disclosure episode.
I have to admit, it's been so long since I've seen that one, I don't really remember it.
That's all good.
I just remember Alex Raven.
Yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of other ones there too. Yeah, most of them are basically James Bond, Nikita type villains, but I just I just have fun seeing them just kind of get a snappy one-liner in before they come up and so.
Well, and I think you know, once in the Raven, once they got to Paris, it's kind of like Highlander or the original Highlander series. They started to have a good season. The first half was choppy at best. You know, they're trying to establish what even the reality is. And then they get to Paris and suddenly it's like, okay, the background can establish so much more for us here than... And then we can work on the character and not need to drive as much of the story. The, you know, when you're making a product, you know, film, TV, whatever, it is visual as much as it is story, as much as it is audio. And when you have the visuals of Paris, you don't need to expend the efforts in some directions where you need to. And you can just have a good character. And you can put a good background on a good character and not have to have a crazy backstory, not to have a whole lot. You know, again, when you look at season one, it's like, oh, yeah, we just showed up at this fashion show. And, oh, that's the guy we're going to kill this week. You know, like it was they the would give a little bit.
Never made much sense to me. I can understand the theater whodunit mystery, but even then
There was two villains for me that stood out in season four that for completely different reasons that I thought were good was Colonel Simon Killian, the colonel, who had his reason for revenge, but actually captured Duncan. And if it wasn't, you know, that's for Amanda. and just toying with him and stuff like that. And I thought that was pretty cool. And we were also in that episode two about the deadliest villains. We gave a shout out to Damon Case and the Immortal Chimoli because he wasn't necessarily a villain because he wanted to kill Immortal Chimoli, who was, you know, a young immortal there and just having fun with immortality. But he was like a by the book rules. He was all about playing the game, you know, and we kind of forget the game that all of these immortals are in when you have this episodic television. And he was all about the game and you know, the challenge and the one-on-one and all that type of stuff. And it was interesting because I even though he was a villain, he kind of wasn't. And we debated that, right, Lee?
Yeah. He was just a guy that had his motivation. And, you know, again,
because he was a gentleman when he was like talking and, you know, but he's like, this is a game. This, you know, he's on the list. I'm challenging him, you know?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Duncan was playing the game, you know, a lot in season one, you know, and he would call people out a lot, you know, pretty much all the time, you know, season two, season three, I'm forgetting the guy that killed, Maurice's niece, Simone. But it was, you know, he's like, no, you're not running away. We're doing this. You know, he's like, yeah, this is, you know, how we do it. You know, there can be only one good as reason as any. Boom. We have that. And it's in that world, it's valid. And it's kind of cool. You know, it's when you think about, like, is it immoral if that's what they're supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of like...
it's a good question.
Yeah. Like, well, like, when I was
supposed to do when... everyone keeps cheating or overstepping, you know, the balance of power.
But like when I was fighting, you know, I fought heavyweight for about 10 years and the degree to which I would hit people and myself get hit is the kind of thing people would say, oh, that's terrible. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, it definitely was inconvenient and definitely hurt. And I still have injuries, but it wasn't mean. And it wasn't, you know, it was what we agreed to do. It was who we were. We got into the ring. We followed the rules, you know. We did it or we didn't do it on holy ground, you know. It was one-on-one, all that kind of stuff. But by the same token, the same things that I did in the ring that were completely valid and understandable and excusable, I can't do that you know, I bounce on the weekends because when you're a giant, you can make a lot of extra money just standing at the door and being scary. When I have to do stuff, I have to be more restrained than I was in the ring. Because what I can do to a normal sized person is unfair.
Exactly. It becomes a kind of stage combat where you must make contact, but not non-lethal.
My thing is to embarrass them. If they're embarrassed, they don't fight back.
I think I did want to bring up in this topic, since we're talking about Highlander villains, because it was a it seemed like an obvious choice to fans. But when Lee and I were discussing it, when we were discussing Duncan's deadliest villains, it would seem obvious to say the Four Horsemen, Kronos, Silas, Caspian, obviously being the evil versions before Mythos found his way and decided to change his ways.
Mythos is a good contrast. No, that's very true.
But we kind of agreed, and you can give your opinion on this, Lee, but we felt they were more villains for Mythos.
Or even a gray area anti-hero, you know, because Mythos is even on the villains Wicca, and it just seems like it's just because of that season 3 reveal of his war crimes. And it's like, well,
yeah, they felt like the rest of his brothers were kind of his burden, and it was up to Duncan to help him fight those villains.
Four Horsemen for those.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Kronos is up there because he's, you know, he's the leader of the Four Horsemen, and they're the ultimate villains of immortals. But they always felt like Mythos villains to me. I don't know, Lee, you still feel the same way about that?
Yeah, and I think I even said this on the episode, but that should have been Mythos and Cassandra fighting at the end against the other two horsemen. It shouldn't have been Duncan. She had probably the most grievance against them.
That's a great point, yeah.
And we established her as an ancient and powerful one, yeah.
They were probably bound by the whole, hey, you know, hero's got to have a fight scene at the end, even though
Cassandra should have been in there kicking some butt, though. Lee's right. Yeah.
Well, because they did have at one point three bad guys versus three good guys. You know, she could have taken down Caspian. And you know, that would have left
Scoggins as a badass.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And she makes her clothes look damn good. But
underrated B5 actress, but that's just me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like the villain in that one-off episode where no one from the main cast appeared. It's okay as its own turns, but it kind of pisses you off when you realize that was the original one-off.
Oh, the Two of Hearts?
They got Claudia Christian.
Also another Babylon 5. Yep.
Yeah. It was one of those, was like, well, the villain was cool, but you could have at least let us in, or at least had Duncan or Mythos appear at the starts, because otherwise, you know, for a while we were wondering what's going on.
Season 6 was an interesting season. It was like the audition season, you know.
It was winding down.
it got interesting.
Well, and Duncan was dressed like he's on vacation the entire time.
Yeah.
They kind of do when especially when Dawson and Mythos have their own one-off, you know, two-part,
you know,
finale. But yeah,
that was a great episode, the Mythos and
give anything in the world for that. And those villains especially that are working with some of the other guys, this is like it, after a while you can't keep up, but unless you rewatch it 500 more times. But at the same time, it's just like, whoa, these guys are using machine guns. It's just not even fair.
Yeah, and I think
what if Joe dies and then you shoot Mythos, he won't be able to get up in time to respawn.
Yeah. I think the missed thing on that was not just doubling down on Amanda and establishing her in like a backdoor pilot season. Because she really was, I mean, she was already in the credits at that point. I know that she had some scheduling conflicts that was why they went to other sources first. But they didn't do a good season. They didn't do a good half season, really. You know, I think it says a lot when none of our, the top 10 list of, bad guys that Kevin and I were talking about on the show when we did this came from season 6. We didn't include Ahriman or the rest of them, whoever they were.
Because you know, it's hard to tell the difference after a while.
Yeah. Right. But the way that it kind of played out, we just kind of lost what was a really good idea. And the way that they could have wrote Amanda out of the show, the way that, you know, later on they would write Angel out of Buffy, that allowed yeah. the show to have some wings.
Oh, hell, if we're going to go there, let's talk about, what's her name? Chrisba Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
Think that was... Or it's like, why were you fired? Oh, because of this yeah. and that. But at the time, we only knew this and that. We didn't.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. That's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to lay this there, but yeah. I just mean it's interesting how it just affects production to where half the time you really can't blame directors or writers who are just trying to make the episode just look fucking cool for the editors to modify.
Well, and having worked on that side of it, it's you never know what the final product is going to be, and you never know when you're shooting it, you know, when you're the actor or the stunt guy, you have to trust that the cameraman is doing the right job.
You
have to
trust you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you have to trust that the editor knows what they're looking
for. We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the U.S., we are in the U.K., we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Yeah, I had a fight scene that I did last year for a festival that was one of the most intricate and best choreographed things that I've ever done. The editor just chose the weirdest takes. It looked like we were walking through and just kind of like literally he would, there was two times in the final product where you can hear somebody say cut and you see both of us kind of get out of character and just relax for a second. It's like, yeah.
Oh gosh.
Just amazing though, too, how, and then when you want to even get like a deleted scene, that's better than, you know, it's likely already in the trash or not properly remastered. So it's like, Well, I'll take it as long as there's no time code.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a time code and that's the only quick take. Well, I better send an editor to remaster this since you guys don't care about our careers.
Yeah, it's I just told Kevin the other day, I just ended up on the History Channel for the first time. And I filmed for 3 hours for what was ultimately about 3 minutes worth of time on screen. which was kind of crazy because they brought me in as an expert. They had this completely other subplot and ends up being something else. So, you know, I mean, I still got to be on TV, and since I don't murder or get killed in this one, all my nieces and nephews got to watch it. But kind of an interesting experience, and you just never know what's actually going to make it to screen.
Oh, totally. You don't even know if someone's going to recut it a different way down the road, pay, you know, X amount of residuals for this. It's just insane. So really digging your takes, guys. Obviously, you know, there's plenty of other supporting villains that are fun too, and like you say, you guys are doing an excellent job just reminding everyone of the fandom, all the various annual events of this ongoing cult fandom. And why do you think everyone kind of just plays it down every once in a while, how, you know, there's clearly a lot of fans out there, but they're not always like the first. You often got to go through dozens of Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones fans these days, you know, maybe Vikings fans before you actually get to the Highlander corner at a convention.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed about Highlander fans is that even though we are a smaller subgroup of like a lot of the major fandoms out there, Star Wars, Star Trek, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, you know, Marvel, DC, we're a passionate group, and we're tight knit too, and we're very, very protective of our fandom, and we know the many, many flaws that it has. A lot of them we accept, and some of them we don't. And it's interesting too, because, you know, with Highlander fans, even though it's out there, we may not whether we like it or not, and if we don't, we don't always will accept it as Highlander canon, even though it might be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's okay, you know, and we all know where Highlander has fallen short, and we've, you know, and
we do podcast episodes about it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And, you know, when it comes to any, and we noticed it's been a lot of pushback on this supposed Highlander reboot that Chad Stahelski, the director of the John Wick films, is supposed to be helming. There's a lot of pushback on this because a lot of people say, and, you know, I think it's kind of a lazy excuse that, you know, they shouldn't do it. Highlander, there can be only one. They always throw that out there that, you know, the original Highlander should stand on its own. Man.
I remember this one cult website back in the day that would talk about how, oh, I watch all the Highlander movies and like Phantasm, they don't make any sense to me, but I love
them. And I yeah,
you know, that away because I was like, did you watch the same movie the rest of us watched?
Yeah, well, my argument is, and a lot of this has to do with the television series as well, is that I think that Highlander has a rich mythology that still can be, that a creative team can still dive into and come out with something unique with, you know, still the Highlander world as a guideline. And so I'm always open. I've been open to this reboot because I kind of want to see in someone who has been creative like Chad Stahelski, especially with his work in action and fight choreography. I would love to see a really good Highlander movie with attention to that type of detail. And I know Lee feels the same about that, yeah. But you know, we're very protective of the Highlander, world as fans, and we'll go to fight for it, we'll battle for it, we'll argue over it, you know. And I know that I know that sounds familiar with other fandoms, but the cool thing about it is that I've forged a lot of really good friendships through this fandom, and a lot of it has to do with not just
they're out there,
yeah, not for just interacting on social media, but a lot of these Highlander conventions I've been lucky enough to go to and meet these people. And I treasure those relationships, and many of them Lee and I have had on as guests as well. Well, I don't know, Lee, I didn't want to speak for you, but how this Highlander fandom is a little bit different than others.
Yeah, well, I think the weird way that it is in our world and not is kind of the first part. Because it, you know, it could take place, you know, down the street from where I'm at right now. It doesn't, other than the Immortals existing, it doesn't require an arc reactor or warp speed or anything crazy like that. It literally just requires somebody to be older than we expect.
Yes.
And it, in that, it allows for the entirety of the human experience to be the plot line. I mean, we go back to, the Bronze Age, we reference Egypt a couple times, so there's things can come and you can have all these different perspectives and you can change the game. And I think that there is something in that that makes it open to more people. The Galaxy Far, Far Away is for everybody, Marvel is, what it is. But this
until
is
until people stop coming,
Yeah, which probably isn't going to happen anytime soon. Even when they complain about it, the movies make a ton of money. The other thing that I think is interesting is the way that it's unknown but influential. It's almost it feels like and it actually is something that Quentin Tarantino has referenced. It's those kind of movies that the movie people know. And it's not just sci-fi that people that really like it. You don't have to be the sci-fi nerd like Kevin and I are. You can just be a straight up movie nerd and recognize the quality of the camera work in the first one. There are references to a couple scenes in Kill Bill Volume 1, when they have the big blue backdrop, that's like, okay, yeah, we're going Highlander here. The way that Russell Mackay kind of changed the way that we shoot a lot of action movies, the different perspectives, all sorts of stuff. You see that the way just think about the soundtrack, what that meant.
Have it without it. It doesn't work.
Well, and like the transitions, the way that, just completely changing cuts. You don't even know how many of the people's favorite movies were influenced by that. So it's sort of like that.
Blade, especially, just so many different movies, just back and forth. And you're just like, but again, this took 400 takes, of everything, just to make it all seamlessly look like it's the same day, same time. Everyone's boxing and fighting and running.
One of the biggest things too about Highlander that makes it so appealing to the fans is, and Lee touched on this, is the connection to real history.
Yes.
And like Lee said, you feel like this could be happening right now. This could be an underworld of beings that have been around for so long, and that when you have the movie or the movies or the TV series, and the flashbacks are such an iconic, I don't want to say trope for Highlander, but it's because it's one of those things that Highlander really kind of fine tuned. I mean, yeah, you've seen going back in time movies, but I think Highlander has really touched on creating the parallels of what's happening to these characters in current day to what's happening in and around historic moments with historic people. And the TV series really got into that. And
it was kind of Quantum Leap 2.0. But
exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, being a history fan myself, as well as Lee, big history nerds, we love the fact that they can wrap these characters around these moments that we've learned in school and going, wow, this is a different take on this.
And actually film somewhere near where a Victorian era castle might have been.
Yeah.
A London type IRA meeting might have been, or even just, like you say, just a cool backstory of how everyone plays this supernatural interface instead of, like you say, well, he's here because he's the chosen one. No, it's a little more than that.
Well, and I also think, as much as I love talking about the Paris sets, what this show and a few others at that time did for, the Vancouver film and TV market that later led to a lot of the stuff we love. I mean, the Arrowverse has filmed in so many locations that we've seen. Stargate, of course.
Plenty of Stargate guys.
There's a monastery set that they had in season 3 during the Callus cycle that kept getting used throughout all of the Stargate shows as like, this is some medieval planet where everyone's Scottish. You just see it. But like, as part of a film community myself, you kind of grow this market and you grow the resources. And, the other thing, getting back to the fandom, is the connection that our fandom is allowed to have with the people that made it.
Good point.
you know, for, you know, a few hundred bucks, anyone can go and train with Adrian. You know, we've talked with Steve Gagan, we've talked with Gillian Horvath, we've talked with Edwin Atkins, just a ton of people, Bron McCash. We can talk to these guys. You know, I'm not going to get an interview with Mark Hamill anytime soon. I don't think Sir Patrick is, you know, going to respond to my emails. But, you know, I've had three conversations with Adrian Paul. I've talked to, you know, Amanda. You know, I mean, I've talked to Elizabeth Grayson. Not only is she the star of this TV show, or one of the stars of this TV show and star of her own, she's a former Miss America. You know, like,
yeah, who would have guessed?
The access that fans have to our stars is really unheard of.
Yeah, it's created this wonderful friendship with these people, you know, meeting, you know, all of these wonderful actors and how passionate they were about it. They show it in kind. And I just want to give a shout out to my friend Jonathan Melville. He's from Edinburgh, Scotland. He wrote the definitive making of the original Highlander.
Yes.
And he went in full interview with all the main people, with the exception, of course, Mr. Connery, because he wasn't available, obviously, but everyone else. But when Lee and I were talking to him about this book, and how wonderful these people were to share their stories with him, he got some of the most interesting stories from the people that were behind the camera. And these are the people that we've reached out to on Blood of Kings, and have been wonderful and willing to come forward and to share their stories.
Like the director of photography, which is my favorite story in the book, the director of photography got the phone call, like, hey, you want to do this movie? And he's like, yeah, sure. While he was sailing, he gets off the boat somewhere down in Florida, just gives the boat to his friend. He's like, I got to go make a movie. Like, this is the kind of stuff, you know. And then as soon as they were done, I think they did the I'm Still Standing video with Elton John, like right after that. Like, it was, or like right before or right after. But like the insanity, Hugh Quarshie, who plays my brain just went empty.
Castigear.
He was watching Live Aid with Oprah Winfrey and Steven Spielberg while this was filming. Oh, you know, like the level of, you know, who else is going to get that story?
Right. Not right here, right now, not today.
Right.
But now it's here and it's out there. And it does make you wonder if even, I mean, I've asked people this before and never really got a complete answer on it. I don't know if there is really an answer to it. It's interesting how half the time when these books have all this trivia, they end up being reposted on like IMDb or whatever. And like, and you care to actually cite that or encourage people to, you know, read the book where you got all this info from, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want
to. As a historian, I always like to cite my sources. So,
right.
And everyone should go and read John's book. It is amazing. So, and John Mosby's book.
John Mosby, who wrote the original one here. Let me bring that out here. Got to give John a shot here. Fearful Symmetry, The Essential Guide to All Things Highlander. And yes, this is one of the common signed ones, as he likes to joke. But this was our Bible right here.
Big ass Bible.
Yeah. And then, and he covered all the movies, TV series, the comics, the audiobooks. I mean, he went all into this. And then, of course, Jonathan Melville did the book itself. And also, too, Jonathan Melville, for if you guys have the new Highlander 4K edition, he actually did one of the audio commentaries. And he gets into a lot of the stuff you mentioned in the book. But there's some stuff in there that he did not mention in the book. And it is, if you are a trivia nerd when it comes to Highlander or any movies and behind the scenes, make sure you check out that audio commentary on the new Highlander 4K edition with Jonathan Melville. It is fantastic.
Sweet. Can't remember if I... No, actually, I haven't gotten it yet, actually. I need to, though.
It's on Amazon. I think there's a paperback now, too, so make sure you check it out. Yeah.
Sweet. Sweet. Any other things you want to plug before we go?
Yeah, check us out, Blood of Kings, our Highlander podcast. It's on the Fandom Podcast Network. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all of our social medias. It's on YouTube. Check it out. And we have many podcasts that are under the Fandom Podcast Network umbrella. And one of those shows, of course, is the Blood of Kings Highlander podcast. You can search YouTube for Blood of Kings Highlander podcast. We've been doing all of our videos putting them on YouTube. You can also go to fpnet.podbean.com for the audio podcast. But we also, if you're a Highlander fan, come by and check out our Facebook group, the Blood of Kings Highlander fandom group. We have a lot of fun and awesome guests there. A lot of the stars from the Highlander TV series and behind the scenes, a couple of the directors as well, are also members of that group. And we love it when they chime in and talk about stuff. It's great. My name is Kevin. I am on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Big Lee, how can we find you, man?
You don't find me, I find you.
Oh, good question. Good answer.
You can find me same places that Kevin just mentioned. I'm all over Facebook under my name. I also have The Way of the Way on Instagram. That's my documentary company. Double Action Martial Arts, Madman Road, a bunch of other stuff. And I'd also like to plug independent film festivals. I do a lot of them. It's where a lot of the people that eventually get to do all the cool stuff that you see kind of hone their craft. I was just nominated 3 times for 2 different awards in a local film festival. This will make, if I win one of them, that'll make the 7th. And if I win both, that'll make 8th awards I've won for
Badass. Writing,
acting, and stuff. And the 3 movies that I was in this festival are all chosen for top 10. So I technically have already won those 3. So yeah, I got to change my numbers.
Lee is the real deal.
Absolutely. Sometimes. I just play one in movies.
Okay, very nice. How about yourself, Kev?
You can find me on Facebook under my name, Kevin Reitzel. And of course, at Spartan_Phoenix on Twitter and Instagram. I did want to mention, if we did talk about Star Trek and Star Wars, we've got Star Trek and Star Wars podcast under our Fandom Podcast Network umbrella. We've got a Marvel podcast as well, Doctor Who. We got several, and a couple of our favorites. We got Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite movies. We've had Lee on for
the
several
heavy metal
of those.
One show is fun. There's
Lethal Mullet, our crazy Australian friend, just doing whatever he does.
Yeah, Lethal Mullet. Adam does our action movie podcast. I got Hair Metal podcast as well. And we do Time Warp, where we look back on entire year of movies, and we split those up and talk about the pop culture in between those movies. And right now we're talking about 1983, because that is 40 years ago, and everything that happened in 1983 are celebrating their 40th anniversary.
How did we get here?
I know, right?
Oh man. So you guys are kicking ass. Keep educating people on this, you know. It's just
it's a Highlander's a fun fandom, and we're proud to do it. And it's a neat little part of our lives that we love to dive back into and do podcasts about.
Totally.
Yeah. And you know, for me it's fun, you know, like I said, I lived in the places where they filmed it. So it's fun to go back and see all these, you know, little memories, and then also having been that kid that dreamed of going places, yes. I can watch it and remember, you know, who it was I wanted to be. And, you know, not to brag too much, but I am making movies. I did live in Paris. I did, you know, fight. I did, you know, learn the languages. I got to do some of the things that I dreamed of being as a kid. So
If anyone ever wants to travel to Scotland to visit Highlander locations, hit me up. I've been there personally, and it is quite a wonderful way to explore Scotland, because there's some scenes that were filmed in and around London as well. But when you get up to the Highlands, there's some beautiful locations up there. Hit me up.
Do it, guys. Do it.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.